You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey, y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 89. The last show was a Q&A episode with David Moore. We answered listener questions about things to do and eat in New Orleans, and we picked David's brain about taking great photos of the city we call home. If you missed that episode, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Today's show is a throwback to the past, 1984 specifically. We're going to go back in time to visit the New Orleans World's Fair. We'll explore the grounds of the site and help you find remnants of the fair as you explore New Orleans today. Before we jump into today's discussion, though, I want to tell you about Two Chicks Walking Tours. If you're a regular listener to the show, you've heard me talk about their great Garden District tour. Today, I want to tell you about their Brothels, Bordellos, and Ladies of the Night tour. Brothels is a nighttime tour that sheds some light on an element of the dark past of the city with respect, sass, and a whole lot of fun research to back it up. It starts close to the river and winds to the back of the quarter. It's currently offered on Fridays and Saturdays, and it'd be a great choice if you want to learn more about Storyville and the people who worked there. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 and the Garden District. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands and you'll have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. Lots of you have been reaching out to me lately about moving to New Orleans. If you've gotten the bug, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place, whether you plan to rent or purchase the home of your dreams. New Orleans is a terrific city, y'all, but choosing the neighborhood that's the best fit for you, it can be overwhelming. Liz makes the process fun and easy. Uptown, downtown, by the lake or near the river, mid-city, the 9th Ward, Liz can help you sort all that out. Reach out to her at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. Several members of our community have already done just that, and they're thrilled with their new homes. You will be too. All right, now to today's subject, the 1984 World's Fair. I have fond memories of the fair, but I hadn't thought about it for a while, until I read a recent article at NOLA.com. That article was written by Mike Scott, a local journalist who decided to dig into the World's Fair through the geography of present-day New Orleans. Specifically, Mike got interested in where the fair was and what those areas of the city look like today. Let's catch up with Mike now, shall we? As I mentioned in the intro, this episode's going to be a little different. We're going to try something new. We're going to be out and about. And the reason for that is that we wanted to kind of dig into the 1984 World's Fair and do that by walking around. I am joined by Mike Scott. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Mike is a reporter at NOLA.com. Recently, you kind of dug into the history of the World's Fair, and it just seemed That's like right. a rabbit hole that was exciting to go through.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, the idea was first posed to me a couple of years ago. A reader sent me an email and said, you know what would be fun is to show the World's Fair site then and then overlay it with what's there now. And that just sort of percolated in my head for a while. And I was trying to figure out a good way to dive into it. And then it occurred to me Google Maps would give us the good now image. And then I went through the Times-Picayune archives and found all kinds of photos from back during the fair and then built basically a guide map labeling it. And I think I labeled like 60 different places.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. And the more I went, the more I found. And, you know, I'd been to the World's Fair a number of times.
Of course.
I was born in 1969, so by the time the World's Fair came around, I would have been, 15? And so I remember coming to the fair a lot of times, and I still learned so much digging through the archives and find. I mean, it really was a fascinating trip.
Well, I felt the exact same way reading your article, and we'll put a link to it, because I could feel the excitement.
Right, yeah.
And I could also relive it. So I graduated Brother Martin, same school that Mike went to in 1988.
Go Crusaders.
ran cross country with your brother.
Right.
Shout out to Bobby. But same thing. Remember coming. Remember some of the things we'll talk about. Got to march in the band at the World
Fair. Oh, you got
World
to be in
Fair.
The parade? Okay, great.
And one of the neat things when I reached out to Mike is we are standing right now on the corner of St. Joseph and Fulton Street, which, as we'll talk about, is right in the heart of what was the World's
Fair. Right, yeah, look what you're standing on right now.
Oh, look
There's
at that.
There's a plaque on the sidewalk. You literally were just standing on it.
We
1984
are.
Street and Sidewalk Improvement, City of New Orleans. They came in here. We're standing on Fulton Street, and it was basically a little bit closer to Poitras. It was a back alley. For a garbage alley for the businesses on what's now Convention Center Boulevard. Back then, I think it was South Front Street. What they decided to do was to transform Fulton Alley into a pedestrian mall and make that sort of the nightlife area of the fair. And because the fair was separated into six what they called neighborhoods.
Yep.
You know, like Disneylands. Of course, in New Orleans, we got neighborhoods.
Exactly.
So Fulton Street was one of the neighborhoods. And so naturally, they had to do a lot of work on it. And this plaque shows all the work that they did on the sidewalks in this area to do it. What's fascinating is now Fulton Street has an active nightlife closer to Poitras Street.
Right.
The nightlife part of the fair was a little bit further this way. In fact, this parking lot right across the street from where we're standing at St. Joseph and Fulton, that was where Reunion Hall was, which was where Pete Fountain played regularly. He played there. The Hyatt Place Hotel, which is right across the street from it, that was the Vatican Pavilion.
Just sort of coincidentally, the building where you work here, TimesPicayuneNola.com, is right here on the corner.
Right here at the corner of Fulton Street and St. Joseph.
Yeah, and just a bit before we dive into the World's Fair, I want to tell people a little bit about you. So obviously, like me, you grew up here in New Orleans.
Right, born and raised.
People can follow you on Twitter at MovieGoerMike.
Correct, I'm the movie critic here at the paper.
Because you're the movie critic, right? Well, maybe we'll talk about the Avengers some other time. So what was your interest in the World's Fair? And also, I want to give a little shout out to you, our fellow podcaster as well.
I do. Yeah, we do. A few years ago, they asked me to start covering history at the paper, using the archives to dive back and cover nostalgia, history, stories. And it's something that I really took to, something I have kind of a passion for, just being, I think, born and raised locally. And we spun off of that a podcast called Voodoo City, where we take a walk through the darker side of New Orleans history. We talk about things like the Axeman or Marie Laveau. We just did an episode on Lee Harvey Oswald's New Orleans. That one's not up yet. We're hoping to have some up later this month or early next. So I think we did our first season with 7 or 8 episodes, and we've got another 7 or 8 coming up for our second season.
Awesome. And again, we'll connect that on the show notes page for our listeners so they can check it out as well.
Great.
So here we are again. A couple things about the World's Fair as we dive into it. First, the World's Fair opened, I think, May 12th, 1984.
Correct. 35 years ago this month.
Wow, right. And we'll release this just a few days before. And that date was significant for another reason, right? It wasn't the first time we held a big fair here.
Right. Exactly 100 years before, we held the 1884 Cotton Centennial Exhibition, basically the 1884 World's Fair. That was held at Audubon Park, and that was significant because it basically reclaimed Audubon Park. Audubon Park at the time was just sort of an overgrown nothing, mm-hmm. and they used it as a chance to rehabilitate that area, and people loved it. It's as fondly as we remember the 1984 World's Fair. People back in the day remembered the 1884 World's Fair. So this was a chance 100 years later for them to sort of try to revitalize the riverfront neighborhood here in New Orleans, but also to pay homage to that century earlier exposition.
Sure, and that World's Fair, or Cotton Exposition, for listeners of the podcast today, was on the grounds essentially of where the zoo is now. Mm-hmm. It was much larger than that.
Well, the zoo, also the golf course. I mean, it really took up all of Audubon Park.
So you can find little hints, and we were talking about that. Maybe you'll do a show sometime about that. Maybe we'll do a follow-up show about where you might find hints and traces of the 1884 exposition.
Absolutely.
But here we are sitting, and what we're going to try to do through the audio medium is kind of walk you through what the World's Fair was like and also give you some clues as you come to visit or as you explore New Orleans and you walk through the warehouse district. You can say, gosh, right here was X, right?
Right, yeah, and that was my whole goal, was to put the fair in geographic context.
And one of the things that just, like, as I wander our city, you talk about Fulton and Fulton Alley, particularly up by Harris and by Poitras up there, by Manning's now today. This was nothing like it is now. It was old, abandoned warehouses. It was not an area you would wander through.
Yeah, where the convention center is, those were old wharves. Here were old, abandoned warehouses. Some of them in use, some of them not. But it was not a very picturesque neighborhood
at
all.
And it certainly wasn't a destination.
Right. And so, you know, we always talk about the 1984 World's Fair in terms of what a big failure it was, because it was a financial flop.
Right.
It's the only World's Fair. It's the only fair that declared bankruptcy during its run. And if I'm not mistaken, it was the last World's Fair held in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think the reasons, I mean, we've kind of gotten away from World's Fairs as a culture, particularly with Disney World and all that stuff. But so in those terms, yes, it was a financial flop, but it was an enormous success just looking around where we are right now in revitalizing really what was a blighted part of town. So now we have the warehouse district, we've got the convention center area. It really has done wonders for this part of town.
Yeah, I completely agree. And every time I see development here, I think back to the World's Fair, and mm-hmm. that's really the legacy of that fair.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, again, the overview of the World's Fair. So 1984 in May, it opens. You mentioned there was a sort of homage about cities or communities, neighborhoods, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give just a little bit of an overview, and then you let me know. And what we're going to do for our listeners is we're going to talk a little, we're going to stop, we're going to walk to the next site, and then we'll fire it up and jump back in.
Yeah, you bet. Well, the six neighborhoods, as I said, there was Fulton Street, that's right here. This was sort of at the back of the fairgrounds. The main section of the first area you would have walked into upon entering the gate would have been Centennial Plaza,
mm-hmm.
which when we go over there, I'll tell you that did actually, there was a good reason for that being named Centennial Plaza. And that's where also the gondola station was. There was a monorail. The convention center, the first part of the convention center, halls A, B, and C were called the Great Hall. And it had just opened just in time to house the Louisiana exhibit and a few other exhibits. The rest of the convention center, D, E, F, halls D, E, and F, it was an open space. That was the Bayou Plaza neighborhood.
Yeah.
What we now know as Riverwalk was the International Riverfront. That's where most of our international
22 or 23
were,
companies,
something like that. Yeah.
Countries represented.
Yeah. And then we also had the, what was it, Festival Park. And that was the area just in front of the what's the name of the building? I'm drawing a blank on it.
Was it the cotton mill back there?
I'll remember it when we come back to it. We'll give us a good chance to walk down there. And that was where, you know, they had a blues tent, and they tried to recreate the feeling of a New Orleans festival. It's where the German Beer Hall was.
Oh, right.
Jed's Lookout was there. So, and I believe, did I run through all six of them? I think that's all six of them.
I think you got them. If not, you'll jog your memory. And again, you mentioned a few minutes ago, right here was Reunion Hall, where we're standing, and Pete Fountain. So Pete Fountain had a club he would play every night. Al Hurt also played a bunch.
Yeah, that was at that was also on Fulton Street. That was in the a building called Seafood Warehouse. And it's now where Mulots is on Convention Center Boulevard. That same building is still there.
Got it.
That's one of the few buildings that still remains.
So should we walk down to where the start of the fair would have
been? Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. All right, so we have wandered down, Mike. We are now on Convention Center Boulevard. I don't see the cross street here.
We're right outside of the Hilton Riverside Hotel, just on the backside of it. And the reason I wanted to stop here is because roughly this space, right, in the neutral ground?
Sure.
That would have been where the mermaids were. And you know what I'm talking about. The entrance gate, the big Poydras Street entrance gate, which was a little bit off of Poydras, actually. And it had those two huge lifelike mermaid sculptures sculpted by Joe Barth III. That created so much controversy because they were topless and very lifelike.
And very voluptuous.
Very, very, very
you and I were both teenage
exactly.
boys back then. So
Quite. And so the fair actually did get a lot of complaints before it even opened. When they put those gates up before the fair opened, people were calling in complaints saying, what are you doing with the naked mermaids? But they left them up there. And on the other end of Convention Center Boulevard, all the way down at the bridge end, this was called the City Gate, the entrance here. They had the bridge gate was at the other end. And that one had Neptune or Triton and a mermaid who was a little bit more modest. Her hair was arranged to cover up anything, and some alligators. So after the fair ended, they took down the gates, of course. I'm not sure what happened to the mermaids, but Triton and his alligator, if you go down Chapultepec, pointing the way to Mardi Gras World.
That's right.
A couple of them are still out there, and those did adorn one of the two entrance gates, the bridge gate here to the World's
yeah,
Fair.
Yeah, so that's a good thing if you're wandering around the city, particularly if you go to Mardi Gras World, you'll see Triton. But again, to kind of anchor where we are, so we're a couple blocks from Harrah's Casino, and you mentioned the Hilton Riverside. There's a big mural, which you and I were talking about offline, didn't exist at the time. New Orleanians know it as the Whale Wall.
The Whale Wall, right.
It's right next to the Riverwalk parking lot.
And yeah, and what's cool about that, and if we can move over this way
sure.
a little bit, this is where you would have walked in. If you would have walked in, you would have come through the mermaid gates, and now we're on the parking lot. This would have been, this parking lot, this whale lot, as we all call it, this was Centennial Plaza. This was they had a monorail station here.
Mm-hmm.
There was the gondola, arose from the far side, closer over to the convention center. There was right here along, hard up against the whale wall, would have been an oil derrick, 17 stories tall. That was the petroleum exhibit. And it was a quote-unquote real oil derrick in that it worked like an oil derrick. It wasn't actually drilling. But you actually had roughnecks from the industry out here doing demonstrations to kind of show how the oil industry worked. You know, this was the mid-80s. The oil industry was bottoming it out, and they needed to get as much positive PR out as they could. So it focused on all the people who make their livelihoods through petroleum. And so that was actually a very popular exhibit. It also had an aquarium beneath it with species from the Gulf swimming around, and that was also extremely popular. So, but now it's just a parking lot. And when you walk in the gate, there was apparently a stand of palm trees.
Okay.
And if you stood at this stand of palm trees and looked out over Centennial Plaza, there were several buildings built with forced perspective and different, but if you know, they were distances apart. But if you stood by these palm trees, they all looked like they come together into one huge building. And this building was built to resemble the Great Hall at the Centennial World's Fair 100 years earlier.
Wow. I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. I was like, why didn't anybody tell me back then? I would have loved to have seen that. But I never did appreciate that for what it was at the time. But it's come to find out since.
So for locals or visitors, we are standing on the corner, and we're New Orleanians, so I'm not about to try to give you compass directions. But we are standing on the corner of the parking lot right next to the riverside, and we are looking at the Riverwalk sign. And the other thing that's interesting is we stand here today. So you see the Riverwalk in front of us, the Hilton to our left, the edge of the Morial Convention Center, but you also get a great backdrop of the Crescent City Connection.
You do,
and the two spans there.
Well, it was just one then. They were still building the second span, which, again, I don't remember that. I don't remember looking out and seeing that being built, but you couldn't have helped but have seen a half constructed bridge, but also maybe a nod to progress. Look, things are moving forward, sure. That sort of deal. So so it really is a prime spot here. This was actually a great spot to build that first part of the World's Fair, I think.
Sure, and really interesting that it had the nod back to 1884. And so this is the way the majority of people would have come in. Mm-hmm. We were talking, you and I, there was a thing called the Wonder Wall.
Oh, yeah.
So this was a big deal. It was
half mile long, or I think might have been longer than that. And basically, if we're looking out here onto Convention Center Boulevard, and it's under construction now, they're going to turn it into a pedestrian mall. But running along the length of the neutral ground, and then curling back behind the then Convention Center. So what is now halls D, E, and F? It kind of curled back onto there into the Bayou Plaza part of the fairgrounds, and it was just this visual cacophony of sculptures and abstract things. One of my favorite descriptions that I heard of it was that it was the Great Wall of China a la Groucho Marx or something like that. Somebody else said that it looked like a Mardi Gras parade come to a standstill, because it was just so loud and colorful. And what's really interesting is it was, they also had souvenir shops in it, you know, so it was kind of a structure. WRNO had a studio inside of it. But it was really a creature of necessity. I didn't realize this until I started digging into it. There are these high tension power lines here that are really ugly and can't be moved. And so they decided to camouflage them by building the Wonder Wall as high as it needed to be to... And I don't know if the power lines we're looking at right now are the ones that were there then.
Sure.
These look a little bit taller, probably. But it was really built to camouflage the ugly power lines that they didn't have the time or the money to bury at the time. And it ends up being one of the things that everybody remembers.
Absolutely. It,
like you mentioned that you were in the parade.
Yes.
The parade route came basically the length of the Wonder Wall.
That's right.
So it was sort of a really the landmark for the World's Fair. And again... Like so many other parts of the fair, you can find it today. You can people have, when the fair went bust, somebody bought the Wonder Wall, dissembled it, and started selling it off in pieces. And so you can see around town in people's homes or in different businesses. There's a backyard along Bayou St. John, I think on along Wisner, where you can see some of the metal leaves, the silver
trees.
Leaves. Yeah, those are part of the Wonder Wall. So they still exist if you know where to look.
Yeah, so that's a neat, if you take the streetcar and go up to City Park and then wander along Bayou St. John, right, there's a cluster or a little grove of those trees. They kind of, now it's sort of faded red, but they had red stalks and silver leaves that are big. And gosh, I don't know how many are at that home, but it might be 8 or 10.
It's a bunch, at least 8 or 10.
Yeah, maybe more. So what else about here? So you would come in through the Wonder Wall,
you'd have the monorail wandering around, winding around, and the monorail was cool. It was what everybody said, that's the first thing you should do is get on the monorail, because you paid $15 to get into the fair, and then the monorail was free. So you could jump on that, and it wound through five of the six neighborhoods, excluding Fulton Street. And people said that's a good way to get your bearings. You jump on the monorail and kind of see the lay of the land before you start exploring. And then after the fare came down, the company that owned the monorail, they ended up taking it down. But you can still ride it today. It's at the Miami Zoo. It's still
really
functioning. The Miami Zoo's monorail is the World's Fair's
How
monorail.
About that? Yep. That's interesting that it went to Florida, too, because that was a very Disney-esque sort of nod.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, as we were walking a little bit, you mentioned the gondola in passing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tell people what that was and what it did.
It was insane.
Yes.
If everybody remembers the Wonderwall, as I said, but the gondola is at least a close second, maybe the first in some people's minds, because it was a cable car, basically, that lifted you up, suspended on a cable over the river, like 300 feet up or something insane like that, and the wind's whipping through if you get into it on a windy day, and it would take you to the other side of the river. You know, there wasn't much to do over there, so you just take it back. And so it just sort of became a ride of infamy. Who had the guts to ride this thing? There were never any incidents, but everybody always remembers it as being extremely dangerous, extremely scary. I remember somebody, what my editor was telling me, a friend of hers, his mama wouldn't let him ride. Oh, you ain't riding that gondola, darling.
And so if you want, you can go hunt out. There is one gondola car here in the warehouse district.
I suspect there may be a few of them, but one gondola car. I was driving down Poey Forest Street. Is that how you say it?
That's how I say it. I don't know.
You drive down Poey Forest Street, and on the right-hand side of the street, there's a little market called the Poey Farm Market, and right out front of it is an old gondola car. I almost jumped out of my car when I saw it. In fact, I did jump out of my car, and I took a picture of it. And it looks like they also have part of what would have been the superstructure of one of the girders that held up the thing. So that's yet just another ghost of the World's Fair that's lingering around
today. Kind of in the back of the warehouse district, if you're walking over to the Rusty Nail, kind of in that general direction. And so where are we headed now, Mike?
Well, we're walking through the whale lot toward the Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, and there's a covered walk that leads up to the river walk, and there's a street just on the other side of that covered walk. That, by my best estimation, is where the gondola station was.
Very good.
If somebody wanted to go kind of walk around and pay respects to the gondola, which actually did run for a while after
the
fair.
Right,
they envisioned it as a commuter system that could bring people, an alternative to the ferry, to bring people from the East Bank to the West Bank back and forth. And it ran for, I want to say, a year, the better part of a year, before just low ridership made them decide to close it down. And then the towers stood for a while.
Yeah.
After it closed, while it was inoperable, at which point I think the Coast Guard eventually came in and said, you know, you got to take that cable down and just get all that out of the way, because it's a problem waiting to happen.
Really close to here is the Canal Street Ferry, which back then and until, gosh, fairly recently, was a car ferry and passenger ferry to get over to Algiers. Now it's still, it's one of the best fun things to do, frankly. It's a passenger-only ferry. I think it's $2 each way.
Yeah.
You can hop on. And
nice
now,
and
of course, there's a lot to do over in Algiers Point.
Right.
But back then, there wasn't.
Right,
so you would take the gondola. I remember taking it. If you've ever been in a gondola, like at a ski resort, imagine that, but perched out over a river.
Right.
With a lot of wind and nothing to block that wind.
Exactly. So right now we're right outside of the Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, and we're going to go ahead and walk in because I want to show you something in here that's interesting. Again, this is the Hall A that we're about to walk into. It was built, and it was called the Great Hall for the fair, and the city knew they wanted to turn it into a convention center. In fact, they'd been lobbying for a convention center here on this site before the fair came along. And then when the talk of the fair came along, they went, hey, you know what? These two things could kind of feed off one another. So the convention center opened just before the fair did.
So again, for our listeners, this is the first time we are like mobile recording. I wish we had a video of carrying all the gear. But that's what we're doing. So now we're inside the convention center.
Now we know it is a convention center. Back then it was known as the Great Hall. And this was where we had the Louisiana exhibit, which was basically a very Disney-esque dark ride where you'd get in a boat and float down, and it would show you all kinds of New Orleans and Louisiana culture, the Mardi Gras parade and that kind of deal inside of the ride. There were also WDSU had a studio in there where they would broadcast daily. They did a daily show for the length of the fair, which is crazy, but pretty cool because you can find some of those online.
Yeah.
You can find them on Google. But look at this. This one part of the hall is labeled right here.
The Great Hall.
The Great Hall. They still pay homage. It was called the Great Hall then. It was changed to the Ernest N. Morial Convention Center, but a part of it is still the Great Hall. It's sort of an homage to the fair that probably not a lot of people don't realize.
I never realized that, and I'm in here all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you come, if you're coming here for business, you come to the convention center, check that out. It's right when you come into the very beginning of the convention center today. That's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you want to go check out the riverfront real quick?
Yeah, let's
all
go
right,
do that.
See that.
So while we're here, again, so you had the Louisiana exhibit, but is this about where the other countries were, or were they a little bit closer? Is that where we're headed?
Yeah, well, this was the convention center was mostly state exhibits. You had the Mississippi exhibit was here. There was also something called the Great River Road exhibit, and it was a paddle wheeler that had been basically built in the convention center, in the Great Hall, and it had small exhibits on all of the states and Canadian provinces that the Mississippi River touched.
Nice.
So it had like 12 different, 12 exhibits in one is basically what it was.
And again, you hit some a lot of these highlights in your article, which we'll put a link to, but it's great to bring it to life. First, as a New Orleanian who was a teenager then, but also I think as a visitor, if you come, it's not that hard to envision some of this.
No, and that's one of the reasons I included. That's what made me the impetus for it was when I had the brainstorm. Oh, I'll use a Google aerial map to label the things that were here then, but on a current map, and that way somebody could follow it. Somebody could take that map out and walk around this area and see exactly where they are and see what exactly was here then.
Sure. Is that Google map? I know it was in the article. Can you click to it and actually get to the Google map?
No, because what I did was I took a Google map of the area, and then I overlaid it with numbers and with kind of marked out where each of the fairs, neighborhoods is on
sure.
it. So that's you'd have to go to the article. But if you Google 1984 World's Fair then and now, it'll be your first thing that pops up.
Sure. So we are now back in the Riverwalk parking lot, and we are headed to one of the covered walkways that will allow you to get up and over the streetcar line
right.
on the river and then get to the Riverwalk proper, what is today the Riverwalk.
And the reason I wanted to go to this particular staircase is because right on the other side of it would have been another dramatic feature of the fairgrounds. That was the amphitheater.
Yeah.
It was this big 5,000-seat riverfront amphitheater designed by Frank Gehry, if I'm not mistaken. It sounds like, Jesus, an outside concert during the summer in New Orleans, that doesn't sound so great. But you always had these river breezes
yep.
coming in.
And it had
cool.
a top.
It did
it
have
had a cover.
Top.
So
yeah,
I can remember it being muggy.
Yeah.
But you weren't in the sun.
It had a big Q on the roof for, I think, Quality Seal. Some tobacco company bought the naming rights to it.
Really?
So it was like the Quality Seal Amphitheater or something. I don't remember. I don't remember exactly.
It had a regular, there were concerts all throughout.
I mean, big, and the big concerts. I mean, you had people like Willie Nelson. You had mm-hmm. Bob Hope recorded, and you can find this online. Bob Hope recorded one of his birthday specials at the World's Fair.
Really?
And so he's the main part of it was here at the amphitheater.
Wow.
And and then of course they would do little field reports from all over the fairgrounds. But that's an hour and a half long, deal with David Letterman is in it, a young David Letterman.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. So as we walk up these stairs, and you have to pardon our huffing and puffing.
This is real world field recording here.
But this would have been the back end of the amphitheater. And what's really cool, as we get about halfway up the stairs, you can see straight through to the river.
Mm.
One of the coolest aspects of the amphitheater was the stage. Behind the stage, there were some curtains. And if they threw open those curtains, you saw the river behind the performer. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned the theme of the fair was, I believe, World of Rivers. And so all the different exhibits had water themes and, what water does for our world. And I think that was a nice little touch to show the river right behind it.
It was also interesting to me that they never planned to keep that open beyond the fair.
Yeah.
And I remember at the end there was some talk about, well, maybe we should keep it open.
Yeah, the fact that it had always been imagined to be something temporary suggests to me maybe it wasn't durable.
Right, exactly.
maybe they couldn't leave it up at that point, but it really does seem like something we should have.
Yeah, it was neat. I mean, we say this on a early May day, a jazz fest day, where, it's going to get to 80 or 85 degrees. So it was steamy, but you could see a use for it. Hey, if you're enjoying this discussion with Mike, you're probably thinking about exploring the sites we're talking about, right? Well, unlike me and Mike, you're going to need a place to stay, and I have just the spot, the old number 77 hotel. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter, and it's really close to the sites we're talking about today. It's also close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and near the streetcar lines, too. The Old 77 has a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. Really something for everyone. They have these interior rooms for when you don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites that are curated by New Orleans artists. There's really a ton of choices for a small hotel. And if that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And here's an insider's tip. Go during happy hour and order a couple small plates. I especially like getting an old-fashioned there accompanied by a side of biscuits. The Old Number 77 is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tutla for coffee and stuff in the morning. All right, let's get back to our exploration of the World's Fair with Mike. So we are now, Mike, we've cut through the Riverwalk, and we are out on the river itself. Let's help orient the listener where we are.
Yeah, there are these openings from the Riverwalk, which is a two-story mall, and they have these openings that come out to the riverside. So we're literally, to our right is the river. You know, I could spit in the river if I wanted to. But we walked all the way back toward the bridge where there's this locked gate. And the reason I wanted to come here is because most of what you see on the other side of this gate of the convention center was not there at the time of the fair.
Right.
The convention center only had halls A, B, and C. D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K have all been subsequently built. But on the land between the convention center and the bridge was one of the neighborhoods called Bayou Plaza. And this contained another favorite of one of the popular features among the children was the Kid Wash. It was an outdoor water garden that sprayed people to cool them off, but they also had this thing that looked like a car wash with these, you know, scrubbies that went back and forth, and whoever wanted to could go through it and run through it. And so you'd have parents take their kids here and drop the kids off at the Kid Wash in the river garden, and then they go see the rest of the fair while the kids played in the water. Also, there, right alongside of the Kid Wash, was a giant Ferris wheel. It wasn't ready on opening day. If you see pictures from opening day, you can tell it was opening day because they don't have all the cars attached to it yet. But it did open, and it was purportedly the biggest Ferris wheel in the world at the time. They also had the Chrysler Pavilion was out here. Mm-hmm. There were a Union Pacific Pavilion. But the big one was the United States Pavilion, the American Pavilion, which was the biggest pavilion on the fairgrounds. And that was just the insight. That didn't take into account the fact that right out front of it was the Space Shuttle Enterprise was parked. We have some dramatic images in our archives of them floating the Enterprise in on a barge. Mm-hmm. And they had it parked here on the riverfront. You couldn't go into it, but it was a pretty awesome sight to see the Space Shuttle sitting there parked on the riverfront.
It was. It's funny that you say that it was here, because I associate that in my head with where the modern aquarium is here in New Orleans, but that's several blocks away from here.
The fair didn't even go down that far.
Right. Yeah. That's across Poitras. So that's interesting. It was amazing, and I remember, and again, to set the stage, this is 1984. This is in the middle of Space Shuttle program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, the Enterprise never went to space. This was built as a prototype, sort of a proof of concept. So it did some high-level flights, and it could fly, but it never actually went to space. It was sort of pre-Space Shuttle.
Right. Yeah. But it was amazing at that time to be able to walk up pretty close and see it. And the other tie there,
and at Michoud, they built the fuel tanks.
At Michoud, right. Yeah, so, you know, very close there. So there was a tie there, and it was, again, right on the river. I remember seeing on the news when they brought the space shuttle in on the barges, because that was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
So, again, you can't see much here today, but the other nice thing walking out here is this is a great spot to take a picture of the river. We have a great view of the Crescent City Connection here. We can see across to Algiers Point and the ferries. And behind us right now, we have some wonderful calliope music from the Natchez.
Yeah, which is actually fitting, because they did have a number of riverboat excursions from here during the fair. You also had moored, I think right around where we're standing, was the Army Corps of Engineer exhibit, which was actually, the exhibit was aboard a reconditioned vessel that was built to be the Army Corps of Engineers pavilion. And that would have been right here. They didn't take excursions on that, but it would have been right here in the river.
And then one of the other things not very far from where we're standing, you and I were talking as we were walking over, is several years after the fair, there was an ocean tanker that crashed into the border right here and actually hit the Riverwalk.
Yeah, I was racking my brains trying to think of it. Morning Star, Bright Star, something like that. It was a Chinese tanker that, you know, it's treacherous when you come into the river. People might not realize it, but you got to have a trained riverboat pilots who know every turn of the river to get on your vessel to navigate it up here to New Orleans, to get, because it's just so curvy and it's got some shallow parts and deep parts. So you have these trained riverboat pilots who pilot the vessel up. And apparently when he came around this turn right here, the pilot realized he lost all power. And I forget exactly what the problem was. The Chinese crew had maintained something in the boat. And so he's blowing his horn, you know, and people are standing here watching going, hey, look at this. This is cool. Look at this loud boat. And then realized, oh, my God, it's coming right for us. He dropped anchor in the river to sort of try to turn the boat so it wouldn't have a full-on hit on the river, on the Riverwalk. This was after the fair. This was after it had been converted into a mall. And it did hit. It impacted here. Amazingly, no one died. But again, I did a story about this for NOLA.com, and we have some dramatic pictures of it, just how torn up it was. It looked like a bomb went off.
Yeah.
The fact that nobody was injured in that. I remember right after there were reports that people were in the water, people were missing, people who knew their family had come to the mall that day but hadn't heard from them. This was before cell phones. Hadn't heard back from them, were freaking out. So that was a huge news event. That was in 1992.
So we'll find the link to your article. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Again, well after the fair, but sort of a legacy of the fair, if you will, in terms of the Riverwalk being here.
Yeah, well, because this was built as the International Riverfront. This is the neighborhood they called this, was the International Riverfront. And so you had most of the state pavilions in the Great Hall. Here you had all your international pavilions. Canada was one that people remember because it had an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
Because IMAX is from Canada. I didn't realize that.
I didn't either.
So they had a huge IMAX screen that really people got excited about. You had all kinds of, some were bigger than others and better than others. China had its own standalone pavilion all the way down at the end of what is today the Riverwalk. But as you said earlier, I believe 22 or 23 different countries, from Australia to South Korea, used to do regular dance performances. That was a big hit. And then it was also cool because as you're walking along it, you could commune with the river. You could be out here, see the river. There was also, you know, we mentioned the gondola that took people over the river. For chickens, there was a regular type ski lift that ran the length of the riverfront here. So you didn't go out over the water and you didn't get too high. but that was a good way to get from one end of the international riverfront to the other.
Well, and that ski lift kind of had its ties also in New Orleans with Pontchartrain Beach.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was a ski lift. So that's another thing. Brian Batt did a book, a coffee table book about Pontchartrain Beach. Mm-hmm. We'll interview him later this year about that. But Pontchartrain Beach, an amusement park out at the end of Elysian Fields, just down from where you and I went to high school, out on Lake Pontchartrain, they had the ski lift that was nearly identical, the colors and all, that you could ride, again, over the length of the park. But as we're, you know, the other thing is, you were talking about the halls. Again, to kind of set the stage, 1984. The other thing that opened right around that time was Epcot.
Right, and that's a lot of people say that's one of the reasons the fair probably failed, because we as a culture sort of graduated from the idea of a World's Fair. You know, it was meant to exhibit the latest technology, the latest, which, you know, back in 1884 and stuff were cotton harvesters, and, you know, 1904, you had electric lights, things like this or whatever. So by the time, I guess we as a culture were a little bit jaded by the time it came around, the number of corporations who participated weren't that great. And then, so then you had the international flair, and what Walt Disney's stated concept when he designed Epcot was to make it a permanent World's Fair.
Hmm.
And so that opened in, what year did Epcot open? It was just before, I believe, 83, 82?
I think 82. It was 82, 83.
Yeah, so people had gone and gotten a taste of that. So the World's Fair organizers here were counting on outside visitors to, you know, to come flock to New Orleans for this World's Fair. But they already blew their vacation budget on going to Disney and going to Epcot. And so they had a fair amount of outside visitors from other parts of the country and other parts of the world. But just not enough. And that was the running theme for the length of the fair, was low visitorship.
Sure.
You would come here, it'd be like Jazz Fest Thursday. It's all locals.
Yeah. Right. But I do remember a couple of things you mentioned. The IMAX, that was probably the first time most of us had ever seen an IMAX.
Right, yeah.
I remember you had to stand up against these rails. It was massive.
Mm-hmm.
And then that idea, if you have been to Epcot, then you very much get a flavor for what it was like.
Exactly.
You could wander in and out. They had the foods of the different countries.
That's right. They had all kinds of different restaurants. And you know what they had? They had an Australian exhibit here, but even more popular than the Australia exhibit was over in Fulton Street, where the nightlife was. That was where we started our tour. They had a bar called Sheila's.
That's right.
And that's where everybody got introduced to Foster's Lager and those oil cans.
That's right. That's right.
So I know that when I posted my story and went up on Facebook, I saw a lot of people had really, really fond remembrances of Sheila's. So now we're out here in the Spanish Plaza. So we're out here on the far end of the Riverwalk in Spanish Plaza, where the Riverwalk gives way to Spanish Plaza. And this really was sort of the far end of the fair. It didn't come out much further beyond this. This was, you had the Whale Wall or the Centennial Plaza, which is where the Whale Wall is. Right in front of us where the Riverwalk starts, that would have been the amphitheater. Mm-hmm. And the China Pavilion would have been out here somewhere along the riverfront, and then that would have been it.
Got it. And so, again, visually, we are very close to the landing of the Canal Street Ferry. In fact, I see the ferry coming over now. And standing here in the plaza, you can see the new aquarium, the new compared to the World's Fair, right, as you are looking towards the French Quarter. And so, yeah, that's interesting to me that it's really it's a block or two. Well, there's Canal Street right there, yeah. But it's a block off. It's set back a little further than my mind remembers.
Yeah, me too. When I started doing it and I started mapping everything out, I was surprised. I thought it went all the way down there.
But now, again, where we're standing in Spanish Plaza, lots of concerts and festivals and the July 4th fireworks.
Meeting of Rex and Zulu every year happens here.
Yeah. Top Taco Festival was recently here.
Oh, was it? Kind of a cool space. I missed that one.
So they've used this more and more as an event space. And again, one of the legacies of the World's Fair, this was a very sort of desolate area.
Mm-hmm.
One of the sponsors of the show, the old 77 Hotel, right over at 535 Chapultepec, was an old coffee warehouse. But all of that was really, there was some industrial usage, but you wouldn't have, it certainly wasn't a pedestrian area.
It wasn't anything pretty to look at. No, it was just old, very practical, useful buildings that were not pretty at all.
And as we stand here, as you said, the World's Fair didn't actually continue on to the French Quarter, but it also had this effect too. Jack's Brewery, if people have been to Jackson Square.
Yeah, everybody knew it was coming. Everybody knew the fair was coming. And so you had people who were on the fairgrounds. A lot of investment, private investment happened on the fairgrounds. But other people around the city realized, hey, this is a chance to shine. We're going to have a captive audience here in the city. And so that's when the old Jack's Brewery, which was a brewery, was converted into a shopping mall with some restaurants and things in it.
Yeah, and it's been many things over the years. But so my anchor mentally for that was running the Crescent City Classic.
Mm-hmm.
1981, 1982, I was 11 or 12 years old. And it used to be the Crescent City Classic would start in front of Jackson Square.
I remember that.
And go down South Peters, very close to where we are, cut over to Britannia and run into Audubon Park.
Mm-hmm.
Today it finishes in City Park. But what I remember from that is you would run by the abandoned Jack's Warehouse.
Oh, wow.
Right? There were still the loading docks and all that. Again, this is the early 80s. But I think that the World's Fair really influenced that and helped develop that part of the quarter. Again, as you say, sort of ancillary. People knew, developers knew, hoped that there would be tourism coming in and people coming downtown. And I think that's just one of the many legacies that we sort of don't think about.
Yeah, there was an effort to sort of reconnect the city with the riverfront. The Spanish Plaza was, I think they first started talking about the Spanish Plaza in 63, and it didn't get built till 73. It's a crazy story. I've read about that too.
Right.
The Moon Landrieu administration opened up the Moonwalk along the river in front of Jackson Square. So there had been these efforts to really sort of connect the city to the riverfront, and then this sort of completed the picture over here with the International Riverfront that takes us almost all the way to the bridge. So you really have this nice, mostly contiguous pedestrian area along the riverfront, and then they're actually improving it even more as we speak, all the way down to the bywater.
Right now it continues right on the other side with Crescent Park.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So now you really do have this vision that maybe took decades to make, that you can come to the river and spend several miles worth along the river.
Absolutely.
Which really wasn't the case before the World's Fair.
You wouldn't want to.
No, you wouldn't want to. That's right. Is there anything else you
want to hit? Yeah, there's actually one more place I want to take you.
All right.
Okay, so we are now, we just walked all the way down Convention Center Boulevard and then crossed over into the name of the building. I remembered because I saw it written on the front of it, the Federal Fiber Mills Building.
Right, so we are walking towards the Garden District.
Right, now we're at the really, really back end of the fair. Yeah. Over here across the street on Convention Center Boulevard, that would have been the Bayou Plaza section, as I talked about before, with the Kid Wash. And there were some other rides there, like a log flume type ride. They called it a shoot the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of other small rides. But over here, the monorail would have come run into and ran through the Federal Fiber Mills Building, and in the building was an establishment called Jed's Lookout that a lot of people partied at, and there was a rooftop bar where you could look out and look over the fairgrounds and see the nightly fireworks. Every night there were fireworks. Yep. that were shot off in the river every single night there, which is crazy. And so also it was on the west bank of the river. You started having a nightly little community would show up and watch the fireworks for free because
right have to great pay for view it. From that side.
Right, yeah. And so one of the reasons I wanted to show you this area is because right here, this park is the Mississippi Heritage, Mississippi River Heritage Park. And it's just a beautiful little oasis. Looks like they're doing some filming in it today. But what it was before, if you remember in the Federal Fiber Mills building, you had Jed's Lookout. You also had a Louisiana Cultural Pavilion. Then you had, in this park area, would have been the Gospel Tent.
Oh, yeah.
The monorail would have wound just past the Gospel Tent. And what they wanted to do in the Festival Park area, the Festival Park neighborhood, would sort of recreate the feel of a New Orleans festival. So mm-hmm. you had the Jazz and Blues Tent. You had the cultural exhibit where you had craftsmen inside of the Federal Fiber Mills building sort of working on different, you know, duck decoys and that sort of thing. And then if you'd cross the street, I believe, I don't know what brand hotel this is, this would have been where the Italian Village was, which Italy had a pavilion in the International Riverfront, just like all the other ones, but sure. they decided to do a little bit extra. And they put together this village that had shops and restaurants and really kind of did a pretty good job of creating a little Italian villa, a little Italian plaza. That was another popular place for people to go see. There were always performances, opera performances, and that sort of thing going
right.
on there.
Well, in this little park where we are now, as you mentioned, it's kind of two-thirds of the way back in the present-day convention center. One of the things, if you're at a conference here in New Orleans, you can step in this park. It's a little oasis, and there's sort of a tribute, a memorial, I'm not quite sure what you would, a piece of artwork in the front referencing Hurricane Katrina.
That's right, yeah, it looks like a house up in a tree.
Up in a tree, right.
It's either an homage to Hurricane Katrina or Winnie the Pooh, I'm not sure.
What or a little both, maybe. That's interesting. The other thing you mentioned, kind of the festival with the gospel tent, I think they did a really good job. If you've been to Jazz Fest, and we're recording this on the second weekend of Jazz Fest in 2019, it's very reminiscent of a mashup of the gospel tent, the economy hall tent, and sort of the artisan's village, which is over near the Fay Dodeau tent.
Yeah, I think they just said in the fair literature they were trying to recreate a Louisiana festival.
Right.
I think they were trying to recreate Jazz Fest.
And I think maybe in your article you had some pictures or some other pictures online. It almost, like the interior pictures of those tents, it looks very much like if you've been to the gospel tent, that's
Indeed.
What it looked like.
Yeah.
But it was a neat thing. It was a way, and again, the fair opened in May. Coincidentally, it would have opened just a week or two after Jazz Fest would have closed that year.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have... Certainly New Orleanians would have walked in and gone, ah, I know where this came
from.
Yeah,
exactly.
But it had that feel to it.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking
pleasure.
Us on this walk through time and through the Riverwalk.
My pleasure.
And,
as you can tell, I can talk about this endlessly. I became so fascinated with the World's Fair that, and as we were walking, I just kept remembering other stuff to say. So, but there's a lot more in that article. Again, if you Google 1984 World's Fair then and now, it'll take you to the article at NOLA.com, which has a map and tons of pictures. And I hope folks enjoyed it as much as I did.
And we'll link to it in the show notes, Mike. You can check out again. The kind of the rabbit hole you went down, but I love that you have the map there, you have the pictures. So when you're wandering through the Jackson Square, excuse me, not through the French Quarter, but if you're wandering through the Warehouse District, you can pull that out and take a look and really get some glimpse into what it was like and the legacy that lives on today through this whole district.
Yep, absolutely.
Again, you can also find Mike at Moviegoer Mike on mm-hmm. Twitter, and we'll put all that over there. Thanks so much.
Sounds
it was
great.
A pleasure.
My pleasure, Mark.
I had a fun time talking with Mike about the World's Fair today. You can and should follow him on Twitter over at Moviegoer Mike. We'll also put a link to his NOLA.com article about the World's Fair in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/89.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.